Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, I'm Pav.
And I'm Neil.
And welcome to the Top 10 of Anything podcast.
Let's start the countdown!
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Every movie needs a villain to hate, and with that, we always need a hero to root for. Whether it's an everyman woman put in extraordinary circumstances or a highly skilled, highly trained hero on a quest for revenge, fortune and glory, there is a hero in all of us, but not all of us can go on a gangster killing spree if they kill our dog. Here's our hero Neil with 10 movie hero facts.
Thank you very much, Hero Pav. So, here we go. In the original draft of Alien, Ripley was going to be a man.
Go ahead. Make my day.
And it also seems John Wick had a hobby in the movies. Although filmed and cut, he loved restoring leather-bound books.
Get to the chopper!
John Wayne always preferred his stage name of Duke Morrison. The studio decided otherwise.
This is my boomstick!
And Bruce Wayne's wealth, as of today, if he was real, would be $9.5 billion.
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
And because he had starred in the big screen adaptation of The Detective, Frank Sinatra had to be offered the role in its sequel, Die Hard. At the age of 73, he smartly turned it down. Speaking of old blue eyes, he was originally cast as Dirty Harry, but had to turn it down due to an injury in his hand.
Go ahead. Make my day.
The first choices to play Rocky in the first movie was James Caan, Burt Reynolds, and Ryan O'Neill.
That's perfect timing.
George Lucas originally wanted Han Solo to be a large, green, gilled fish monster.
I'm always angry.
While shooting, Peter O'Toole and I.S. Johar riding together on a single camel, Sir David Lean saw that they had trouble staying on the animal. On closer inspection, a large block of hashish was discovered. Both actors were completely stoned and shooting was abandoned for the entire day. And Indiana Jones was
Hang on, he hasn't finished his bit.
Oh, that was very quiet, that one. Indiana was actually the name of George
Lucas.
You
still never let him finish.
You can't hear it.
Hang on, Jesus.
That was very quiet, that one.
Right.
Very quiet. Indiana was actually the name of George Lucas's dog, an Alaskan Malamute. He was also the prototype for Chewbacca. Oh, we got there.
Is that it?
That's it.
Yay.
Short one this week.
Oh, goodness me, that was hard work. Anyway, hello, Neil.
Hello, Pav.
You okay?
I'm all well and
wonderful,
good and hero-tastic.
Wonderful facts this week. our guest this week is not only a patron. Is that how you say it? A patron?
Patreon?
I don't know. He also is a host of his own podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, will you welcome Andrew Connor to the podcast?
Hooray! Evening, guys. How are we?
We're doing good. We're doing good. We'll talk a little bit about your podcast first, if you like, before we delve to the thing. Tell everybody what it's about and why you started it.
So the podcast called Road to Nowhere, nowhere spelt with a K, which is a reference to Guardians of the Galaxy, the planet they go to. Basically what we do is we started out with Halloween Kills. That was our first episode because we'd just all seen it at that point. And then we pick someone from that cast and look at their back catalogue and then pick a movie. It's mostly based around comic book, sci-fi and horror is kind of what we go for. And then so on and so forth. So the one after Halloween Kills was War for the Planet of the Apes. And so we picked Judy Greer from that. And then for the next one is Scanner Darkly, because Woody Harrelson's in both. So that's kind of how we keep it going, keep it a wee bit different. We had a few Christmas specials and things like that, and just the usual at that time of year sort of thing, a New Year rundown. Started doing it just because I love talking about movies. I know that's going to be a bit of an easy answer, but that's why. Basically, I'm married, and my wife have similar tastes, but she's quite into the comic book side, but not so much the sci-fi or the horror. And I was just looking for an outlet, really, for discussing that.
I had a little listen to your sort of review of 2021 today, and I have to say, I agree with your assessment of Zack Snyder's Justice League.
Good.
The guy that you were talking to didn't like it, did he?
Neil, no. So it was, Neil really hates, I think, pretty much everything Zack Snyder. I had a lot of fun with that movie, yeah. Is Army of the Dead, we spoke about, I had a lot less fun with, but
no, that's right. I was sat at work nodding with you when he kept saying that it's a load of shite, and you were going, oh no, because don't want to really get into it, but the original Justice League is one of the worst movies I think I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's utter dog shit.
Yeah, but the other version, I think, just makes so much more sense. And I watch it anytime it's on Sky, I'll watch it, and even though it is for like 4 hours long.
Yeah, I've got the 4K Steelbook. Got that on release. Annoyed me, though, because it's still in the 4x3, which I'm not a fan of. I don't see what that adds to it, if it actually takes away from it. But yeah, that was a fun episode. It just ended up, there's five of us, basically, and we just kind of... chop and change. I'm mainly the host, but we'll have like a chop and change for this weekend. I think we're recording, discussing all our Marvel's releases for last year, and I think there's me plus another two for that one this week. So it's interesting, and having the different inputs does help, even if we disagree.
Well, do you have a favourite genre yourself then?
I'm probably horror, I think. I mainly go horror, yeah. I like old movies, probably mostly apart from musicals. I think the last musical I liked the Hamilton thing that was on Disney Plus. But actual musical movies, La La Land I liked, and I can go a bit of Disney musicals, but most things I do enjoy, as long as it's kind of well made. And
Well, if there's one thing that can get everybody talking and disagreeing, it's a top 10 list. Without Neil and I, just before we go into that, Neil, what was your decision on Zack Snyder's Justice League?
Can I be honest?
I hope so. I don't want you to know.
I haven't seen it yet. No, because I don't want to buy it. I haven't got Sky Movies, and that's the only place I know that streamed it so far. And I'm waiting for one of the other places to drop it free for me.
Right. Okay.
Anybody would think I was Scottish, Andrew.
Oh, already?
Oh my God. What a way to piss off our guest, Neil.
I'm joking. Come on. I love Scotland. I holiday there every year, and I still make the same joke when I'm up there. So
yeah, I'll make sure and have a look for you when you're next up.
Yeah, come and find me. Usually in the Glasgow area.
It works with Arm as well. So,
oh, there you go.
I'm just waiting for you at the border now, Neil.
Yeah. I'm next to the Glasgow Fort, if you know that at all. It's kind of the East End. It's like a shopping centre.
Right, okay.
but 10 minutes from the city centre, that's where I am. And I was going to wear my Italia Euro 2021 t-shirt tonight, and I decided against it.
There you go. You could have had your little kick as well at us.
Plus, I mean, Chelsea Spurs tonight, we can see how that goes.
Yeah, come on, Spurs.
To be fair, yeah, I do agree with that. I don't like Chelsea, but anyway, that's a different matter. No.
Right, let's get going to the matters at hand. Top 10 movie heroes. Now, I know that you were having troubles, Andrew, in compiling your list. I did find that there are different categories of movie heroes. Mm-hmm. I've stayed away from things like historical heroes. So I'm really interested, especially Andrew. Like you say, I've been messaging you for the last couple of weeks, and you've been going on about how you changed it so many times. So we'll kick off with your number 10. What's your number 10 movie hero, Andrew?
My number 10 is Trinity.
Okay.
Obviously from The Matrix. I've chose Trinity because I think, especially in the first movie, she seems to be the one who drags Thomas Anderson / Neo kind of up by his lapels, makes him be what he's supposed to be, almost. Yeah, I just think she's the real standout. It's more so the first movie, maybe 2 and 3, not so much, but yeah, definitely in that first one.
Well, there was a 2 and a 3.
Aye.
I've just rewiped them from my memory.
You've seen the new one as well, Andrew? Andy.
I have, yeah, I did.
What did you think of that? No spoilers, but...
No, of course. I think it's the second best Matrix movie. I do enjoy 2 and 3. I think there's a lot of flaws about them. I didn't need to watch a rave in Zion. In 4, there's certain bits that possibly work and possibly don't. I like what they tried to do. I'd rather I think it was Lana Wachowski.
Yeah.
I'd rather she made it than some fucking nobody that Warner Brothers have just hired and thrown a shite ton of money at.
Mm.
But it has its flaws, but I enjoyed it more than I expected.
Yeah, I think the problem with the sequels is the CGI in it is dated so badly.
Mm-hmm.
It's taken you away. That's one of the issues, and obviously the story was dreadful. Yeah. But yeah, that really has those two compared to the first movie. The sequels are dated awfully.
Mm. Yeah, one thing about number 4 that I found was there was no bullet time moment.
Mm-hmm.
Because special effects and CGI have come so far now from... I can remember watching that bullet time moment in the first Matrix and thinking, how did they do that? That is amazing. Yeah. But everything they do in the new one, you've seen so many times before now, and it's sort of like there's nothing that can really surprise you.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed the fourth Matrix. It's just a bit too meta for me.
The first act really, isn't it? The first kind of 40 minutes is really meta.
Yeah.
I quite enjoyed that. When I heard about it, I was very worried. But I quite enjoyed that kind of knowing, nudging, wink, wink type of thing. but then, it kind of tries to expand the lore a wee bit, make it a bit different from the previous stories that it's told. Neil, as you're saying, I mean, with 2 and 3, the CGI is horrendous, especially the fight in the park, looking back at that. I remember seeing the two of them in the cinema when they came out. I think that was one of the first 15s I got into legally when that came out. And I remember at the time being just astounded by it. But yeah, as you're saying, you don't really have that bullet time moment that they could have brought forward and kind of upgraded, but I think it was a decent stab at it. I'm glad they did make it rather than not.
Go on then, Neil, your number 10.
Jack Burton, Big Trouble in Little China, good old Kurt Russell. I revisited this film and really enjoyed it and forgotten how much fun Kurt Russell is in the role. He's a hero with a wink. He's a hero that hasn't really got any ability as well, but seems to get it right or wrong with the right outcome. And it's a character I think they should revisit with Kurt Russell still in the role. Easily done. Yeah. It would be very, very funny. If done well, it could be a brilliant film.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there's my number.
He looks great in a tank top.
He does. I'm not too sure about his boots, though. Those long, almost woolly Ugg boots he wears. I know they're not Ugg boots, but they look like it. Although he has got a knife in them.
That's a movie I've never actually seen, and I feel bad saying that. No.
Really? Highly recommend to watch it. It's a great 80s.
It's on the knife edge of being a really camp movie. There are parts in it that you think is that bad acting, or are they just really making it really camp?
Mm.
Especially some of the lines that Kim Cattrall says in it.
Oh, yeah. I think it's on purpose, though, because they seem to have this glint when you watch it now in their eyes. In, you know, they're sort of enjoying the shite dialogue. I think it's all part of it.
A bit like Flash Gordon. It's that kind of thing. You know, the Flash Gordon movie.
Yeah. It's Carpenter, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. John Carpenter,
I've
seen
pretty much all his movies, so I don't know why I've just...
It is on Disney Plus. There you go.
Oh, well.
It's a lot of fun. It is a lot of fun. It is really in the mold of like the Indiana Jones, just those kind of just balls out action. And Kurt was just good in everything. I don't think I've ever seen
it. And your hero does a whole section wearing lipstick as well.
Indeed. What else do you need?
Exactly. Exactly.
Right then, my number 10 is the only movie hero I've got from Star Wars. Originally, it was going to be Luke Skywalker, but over the last few days where I've been self-isolating, we ended up watching the prequel trilogy, and I changed it to Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Cool.
Out of everybody in Star Wars, I think I don't think he ever loses a lightsaber fight, apart from succumbing to Darth Vader in Episode 4, if you like. But that was, he didn't really lose that. He decided he wanted to be killed. And he's the one that is at the forefront of everything. He doesn't step away from any kind of fight. And even right at the end, he has the ultimate sacrifice. But he also spends a lot of his time just on Tatooine, looking after Luke from a distance. So he gives up a lot, which is obviously the Jedi way, if you like. So... yeah, I had to have somebody from Star Wars in there. Unfortunately, Han Solo didn't make it because he dies. Spoilers. And and Luke, because, you know, in the sequel trilogy, he's a bit of a pussy in the sequel trilogy. So, you know, he would have been there if it wouldn't have been that. But yeah, Obi-Wan Kenobi is my number 10. So, Andrew, you're number 9, please.
My number 9 is Ophelia from Pan's Labyrinth.
Okay.
This is one of my favourite movies of all time. I think it's a masterpiece visually, with the story and what the character Ophelia goes through in the kind of fantasy world, where if you believe it's real or not is kind of up to yourself, but she goes through that in the fantasy world with all these horrible creatures, but she's also going through it during fascist Spanish rule at the same time, having a dictator as a father. I just think in her kind of bravery for sticking up for her younger sibling and her mother and things like that all the way through the movie, I think she's, for such a young character to go through that is quite something.
Mm. That's a great choice.
For a while, I need to go back and watch that. I think
it's got one of the most brutal moments in film, isn't it? With the bottle. That's all I'll say.
Mind boggles now just thinking of that.
He's such a horrible bastard, isn't it? He's obviously a fascist. He's one of Franco's. I think he's meant to be one of Franco's generals, maybe. It's such a good movie, and I'm not speaking about this before and in our podcast, and I'm not much of a crier for movies, even though I say that, and then I keep my list off some of them. The list is as long as my arm. But yeah, that one just really got to me with how it goes.
Yeah, it's an emotional movie. It really is. That's a great choice.
Okay, then, Neil, your number 9
is Robert McCall, The Equalizer.
Oh, he was so close to being in mine.
I'll go mainly from the first movie. I do enjoy the second one, but the first movie is... I know people that enjoy this one over John Wick. Denzel Washington plays cool but hard, unlike anybody else I know. And the whole looking after Chloe Moretz, or whatever her name is now, and going for them, and, you know, and the way he calculates how he's going to kill them and everything like that, I just loved it. And it's a pure ride the whole way through, and love it. And he's he plays it so well that, yeah, give him another movie, bring him back again.
He did two movies, because there's a really unsettling death in the second one with the guy that plays the Mandalorian, Pedro Pascal.
Oh, yes.
With the knife.
Yeah.
I sometimes will lie in bed for some reason, that vision will pop in my head and I can't go to sleep because it is just such a cold way of killing someone. Just see it if you don't know. But yeah, he was very, very close to my top 10.
Yeah, I think he does it really well. Have you seen those movies, Andrew?
I've seen the first one. Yeah. I've never caught the second one. He's so kind of not cold, but single-minded. Yeah, calculated. Yeah, and single-minded in how he carries everything out. Yeah, I think anything with Denzel Washington in it is worth a watch, even if it did turn out to be a bit of turkey. But no, the first Equalizer isn't. But yeah, it was a crying action movie. He's brilliant. Yeah.
And he's one of those people, the character, same as like John Wick, that I think anybody wished they could be that kind of person.
Yeah.
Help somebody by kicking the shit out of somebody or killing them, not being too dark. But do you know what I mean? you could have those skills that you could stand in the middle of a street with, five yobs in front of you and you think, I'm going to be all right because I'm just going to kick the shit out of all of these because I've got the skills to do it.
Yeah.
Talking of that, my number 9 is George Bailey from It's a Wonderful Life.
A man that is known for kicking the shit out of him.
From John Wick and Mr. McCall. We've said what we need to say about the movie on our Christmas movie episode. But I think, again, someone who is absolutely selfless all his life and to the point that he thinks that he's wasted his life when actually it's the complete opposite. He doesn't realize how many people he's touched. And the same with, don't look like that, Neil. Don't start getting us in trouble. It's not like that. It's your mind. How does it work all the time like that? For goodness sake. I've completely lost my train of thought. Yes, it's George Bailey. I've lost my train of thought. He's a lovely man. And
he's a hometown hero.
He's a hometown hero. And you don't realise how many lives you touch by being nice. And I'm not going to say the word touch again. No. So, Andy, your number 8, please.
It's a genius billionaire playboy philanthropist. That was easy for me to say. Tony Stark, Iron Man. Robert Downey Jr.'s performance is great. The man that kicked off the MCU, kind of as we know it now. And his character arc, I think, is probably the best, I think, that the MCU have done with how he develops from being this just arrogant, cocksure, womanizing alcoholic and to just a slightly less arrogant, cocksure, womanizing alcoholic. But there's a kind of an emotional development with him and his attachment to, like, how his relationship with Pepper grows and his attachment with Peter Parker, Spider-Man, and everything that goes through with Kat. And then, not going into spoilers for everything, but how his story kind of wraps up. It was between, my number 8 was between him and between Captain America. And I just think Captain America was just a bit too wholesome. And his brashness just kind of won out in the end.
Yeah, I mean, with the Captain America, everything that was good about him came out of a bottle, as Tony Stark once said. Whereas I think you're absolutely right. I think his whole arc through the whole MCU, all the different phases, again, one of those moments where it just kicks you in the guts, where you realise what's going to happen. I don't know whether we're doing spoilers or not. I mean,
4 years old,
if you haven't seen Endgame by now, then you're never going to watch it, are you? So,
and it tells you straight away when you watch the trailer for the Spider-Man after that, didn't it? Far From Home.
So, pretty much, yeah. People will know. Yeah, I suppose if you're a fan, you'll have seen Endgame by now. And it's actually the last part of use our kind of intro tune is him doing the snap. I remember being in the cinema and especially at the start of Endgame where you see he's got a daughter. I went, okay, well, he's off the table then.
Yeah.
That's it. He's fine. There's not a chance that he's going to die. And then just that realisation, as you're saying, and you see the kind of realisation in his face as well, I think, when Doctor Strange tells him to just puts his finger up and tells him to wait. And his face just goes ashen. But he still carries it out, even though it's leaving behind the people that he loved. But it was the ultimate sacrifice in that world.
You know, it's funny you say that. I always thought that Doctor Strange put his finger up because he was talking about that. This is the one moment. Because he said there was only one moment. And, and like you say, it's almost like then Tony Stark realises that he's got to sacrifice himself.
Mm. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, what a movie. I remember sitting in the cinema. I think I went and see it sort of three times. Every time when it was on your cap on your left.
Oh, brilliant.
Tears streaming down my face. It's just, because it's like, you never thought that they would be able to make a movie with Thor, Captain America, Iron Man, just like the Avengers in it. Mm-hmm. So to be able to get all of those people in there to culminate the whole 10 years, mm-hmm. I mean, what a moment. What an absolute moment that was.
I remember when the first Avengers movie was coming out and I was sitting going, there's no way this can work because they've got the main ones. They've also then got Black Widow and Hawkeye. They can't make this work. It's going to be an absolute mess. And coming out of that going, that was the best movie ever. They need to make more of these. And then it's culminated, as you're saying, Endgame is literally everyone. it's fantastic.
You've got to commend MCU, I'll say Paul Feig. It's not, is it? It was the other one.
Kevin Feige.
Paul Feig.
Wrong one.
Not the wrong one. Okay, then, Neil, you're number eight.
Is another billionaire playboy superhero, Bruce Wayne, Batman. I've always been a fan of Batman from the child watching the 60s and through. And yeah, he's my superhero hero of choice. I nearly went Iron Man in my list. I have to say he became an honorary mention. But no, Batman for me, it's just everything that would love to be growing up, you know.
Which is your Bruce Wayne?
If I had to pick a movie one, it'd be Michael Keaton.
Right, okay.
All right.
He's my number four, just let's say as well.
Batman. Yeah. Oh,
Batman.
There you go.
Batman Bruce Wayne, yeah, he's my number four. Yeah.
So Michael Keaton in the movies, I'm going to ask Andrew whose his would be.
It's Christian Bale. Yeah, just my kind of generation. I still love, and I did love the Burton Batman. I have a bit of time for Batman Forever as well, but then you get Batman and Robin. Less said the better. For me, just Christian Bale. I love the realism of the Nolan trilogy, bringing it down at that kind of gritty dark world, which a lot of movies have tried to replicate and maybe not got it as spot on, especially with certain characters like the Joker and yeah, I'm a huge fan of the Nolan trilogy. Mm. I actually have the Joker and Bane tattooed on my thighs, but I'll not show them.
We'll take your word for it, Andy. We'll take your word for it.
You see, I'll send you pictures.
I'll put the cat amongst the pigeons a little bit. I revisited the Nolan Batmans. The first two are really good, although I do have problems with The Dark Knight. I think the ending is atrocious.
Yeah.
The third one is a load of bollocks.
Oh,
really.
Mate, it's one of the worst. Comic book movies ever.
That's my favourite.
Really?
Yeah, the three, yeah, I absolutely love it. And I don't know if it was just the hype and the build-up, like, it was 4 years, I think, after The Dark Knight came out. It was between that and Dark Knight Rises. Mm. I absolutely love it. I love the set pieces. I think Tom Hardy's Bane's great. I know, again, not a lot of people think that. I think... Overall, it's a better movie than The Dark Knight. The Dark Knight gets saved a lot by Heath Ledger's Joker, especially when you're saying the ending is nonsense. The Dark Knight Rises, I just absolutely loved. I do have an issue with the ending of that as well, because I think they bottled it a wee bit, basically. But
that's what I think he did. He played safe, and
that's a whole podcast in itself.
Yes.
Dark Knight Rises. Okay. Right, my number eight. We're on number eight. Yeah, my number eight is Shaun from Shaun of the Dead. I think with my top 10, they are all normal people in extraordinary circumstances, as opposed to your John Wicks, you know, people that are highly skilled, just going out for revenge. And Shaun is just somebody that is just, he's somebody that is trying to survive and hasn't got the skills, where he feels the only place that he needs to get to is the pub. Just get to the pub and everything will be fine. Everything will be safe. Everything will be cool. My girlfriend will come back to me and everything will be wonderful. it's a great horror film just to start with, before you think about how funny it is and how great all the characters are. But I haven't seen the film for a while now, but he's just one of those characters that, for the arc, he doesn't want to be a hero to start with. He's oblivious to everything that's going around him. Hmm. But by the end, he's almost like a John Wick kind. You know, he's ready to just kill everybody, you know, just to survive. So, yeah, that's my number eight. No one else got him? No?
No.
Not
no.
Sean? No. Didn't even think about it.
I must admit, I thought we'd have a few more... duplicates at the moment, but we haven't. We're good. So, Andy, number seven.
Beatrix Kiddo, the bride from Kill Bill. Probably Tarantino's... I've liked all of Tarantino's movies, but probably his last really great one was Volume 1 of Kill Bill, I think. I like Django. I like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I like Inglourious Basterds, but I think Kill Bill was probably him reaching that peak, the peak of his momentum that he had with Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction, and then he'd done great with Jackie Brown, and then Kill Bill Volume 1, just as an action movie and as a kind of love letter to Eastern cinema as well, possibly a wee bit stereotypical at parts. The fight with the Crazy 88, the Oren Ishii fight, and also Kill Bill Volume 2 I really like as well. It's just a bit underwhelming, I think, compared to the first one. I feel that one has more of a Western feel, as in Western style movies than Kill Bill 1.
Yeah, he very much went for the Leone look, didn't he? And the long trawl through rather than everything being snappy. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's a great movie, Kill Bill. I'd love to see the whole bloody affair.
We were saying that when we used to do our movie podcast, wasn't it, Neil? There was rumours that it was going to be coming out and it was going to be like a 4-hour... Along with Saving Private Ryan, I think it's got one of the most sort of ball-busting, gut-punching starts to a movie, Kill Bill Volume 1. I remember when I was where I was working at the time, we used to have a Friday, because we used to finish at like 12 o'clock on a Friday. We'd go to the cinema and watch a movie, and it was Kill Bill Volume 1. And like fuck spoilers, because everyone would have seen it by now. But when the bride gets shot in the head, it's fucking hell, what was that? And then she has the fight with...
Fox, isn't it?
Ivica A. Fox. And the way that fight finishes... you think, fuck, I've got no idea what's going to happen now, because that was a thing with a Tarantino movie. If someone went into a room, you had no idea whether there was going to be someone the other side of the door with a gun that's just going to shoot their face off. You know, it's just like you just didn't know with a Tarantino movie, so you were always on edge, always thinking that something bad was going to happen. I love both of those movies.
Great movies.
Snuck into that one as well. I think it was 2002, maybe. So I would have been 15. I bought a ticket for Finding Nemo, I think, and walked out and snuck in and prayed that no one noticed me. Back when you used to be able to do that, when there was very little CCTV.
The great days. Pay for one film and watch three.
Yeah, thank God you didn't get that the wrong way round. That you was going to see Kill Bill and all of a sudden Finding Nemo come up. Go on then, Neil, you're number seven.
Rocky Balboa. What's not to say?
Yeah, he's my number three.
Excuse me. Just from the first movie, isn't it? A poor lad done good, come through the ranks and got up there and did the business. All the Rockies in their own way are inspiring. I mean, Rocky 2, not so much. That's a little bit dull, Rocky 2, isn't it? A lot of going on with the adverts and all that shit. But Rocky 3, yeah, you saw his human side. I mean, I still find that heartbreaking when Mickey dies. And Mr. T, what an asshole he is in that. But yeah, he's an inspiring hero. And especially now in the new Creed and that, I find it really nice that they sort of brought it round. I mean... And has anybody watched the new cut of Rocky IV?
No, I saw the documentary. Yeah.
Right.
I saw the documentary of him putting it together. Which looks
apparently it's really good, isn't it? Yeah, apparently it makes it a lot better. So I'll be intrigued to see that.
They completely cut the robot out. The robot in the number four. The one that...
The gift for the
Paulie, the one that Paulie was having...
Yeah.
Fling with.
Thank God.
Thank God. Yeah.
Touching again.
Yeah. Okay, right. My number seven is from Harry Potter, and it's Neville Longbottom.
Oh.
Good show. Again, we started watching the Harry Potter movies again and Deathly Hallows. It's not just Deathly Hallows. There's a couple of bits during the whole Harry Potter saga that Neville Longbottom's the one that sort of stands out as a bit more of a hero than, I mean, obviously Harry Potter is a big hero because it's his story, but Neville Longbottom's the one that sort of, he isn't a hero, but will do heroic things.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, he is a hero at the end of the saga, isn't he? When he picks the sword up.
Yeah, if it wasn't for him, they wouldn't have killed he who shall not be named.
Mm. He's quite a constant through line in the movies, isn't he, Neville? He's like a almost like a, there's a lot of naivety about him, but when he needs to, he does step up. He'll stand up to the bully. He'll stand up for his friends, and that's what I think in the books it seems like there's a bit more piss taken about him than maybe in the movies. But yeah, definitely in the movies he's one of the kind of the constant good throughout the whole thing.
Yeah, and the fact that in the first movie he stands up, like say, to his friends and gets frozen, but then wins the points that wins whatever it is, the House Cup or whatever. And then in the last one, he stands up to Voldemort, you know, thinking that Harry is dead. What a hero.
Yeah.
And a great name as well. Neville Longbottom.
Plus, that guy has aged well. And he just looks like Clive Owen now.
Yeah, he's done all right, hasn't he?
Clive Owen now.
I mean, he hasn't worked since Harry Potter, but he looked
good. Has he not?
I don't know. I mean, he might have done, but I don't know.
Have you watched have you seen the 20th anniversary?
Yeah, I watched it.
That was quite good, quite interesting. Yeah.
All right, it was a bit too much brown nosing for me, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it was very American, wasn't it?
Yeah, the emotional bit. So I thought, oh, let's speed that on and watch it in fast.
Yeah, but Neil, you're dead inside, aren't you?
dead everywhere.
You get actors together and then they start just so bad with it. Yeah, they love talking each other up. I used to listen to the Fake Doctors, Real Friends podcast, the Scrubs one.
Right.
Which is Donald Faison and Zach Braff. And every episode they're discussing either an episode or two. And they're inviting an actor on, and he's like, "Oh, Zachy, you were great in that episode." "No, I wasn't. You were great in that episode." Yeah. So fuck off. Tell them he was rubbish. It's fine.
I used to listen to, I can't remember what it is. It's fucking can't remember. Fuck it, I even said it. Every name and everything is completely gone now. Jason Bateman does a podcast.
With Will Arnett and
he was good catching. I can't remember.
Will Arnett and the guy for Will and Grace.
Yes. Yeah. And the first few were really, really funny. And then all of a sudden every guest they had, they'd be fawning over the guests. Yeah. And they'd be saying, "Oh, but you're amazing. You're fantastic." Right. I think, "Oh God, okay, I'm not listening to this anymore."
Everyone's the same, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay then. That was my number seven. Andy, you're number six, please.
It's quite relevant for this week. It's Sidney Prescott.
Oh, yeah.
From the Scream series. I think, obviously, the Scream movies, I think they've a fairly consistent quality. Obviously, not seen the new one. I'm going to go and see it on Friday. And she's been through everything from the start. She just develops her character from this kind of scared teenager that then wants to move on and try and fight back against whatever the killers are throughout that whole time. Yeah, yeah, and a great Scream Queen, I think, as they get called nowadays. But yeah, I think she was fantastic.
What's your favourite Scream movie? Which one?
Two. Number two is my favourite. Okay. Yeah, I go 2, 1, 4, 3. Probably the way.
Yeah, I've just revisited them and watched all four in preparation. Mm-hmm. And yeah, they're great movies and strong female characters as well.
Yeah.
Which wasn't a thing in the 90s, really, was it? It was all loaded and FHM sort of style. But yeah,
why are you saying that like it's a bad thing, Neil?
What's wrong with loaded? We've moved on from that now, haven't we? Have the we? Lads culture. Yes.
Some of us might have, Neil. Some of us might.
But I'm intrigued to see this new movie because different to you, Andrew, I actually thought they got progressively worse. Not bad, but worse as they went on. Mm-hmm. But I am intrigued to see the new one and where they go with it. Is it anything to do with, like, Williamson or... I know Wes Craven's dead, but has he got anything to do with this, Kevin Williamson?
Don't know who's written it, actually. I know it's... I can't remember the company name, but they made Ready or Not...
Right, I have seen that. Is it A1 or whatever it's called?
What are they called again? I can't remember their name for the life of me, but they're the writers and directors of it. It seems to be getting a good write-up as well.
Yeah, it's had some
early doors. Mm.
Yeah.
And I think what the good thing with the Scream movies is they get a tonal balance. Yes, there's comedy in it, and I think sometimes it gets overlooked how dark they can get and how brutal they are. Especially that opening scene is like really heartbreaking in the first movie.
Yeah.
Really heartbreaking where I think I'm blanking with her name now as well.
Drew Barrymore.
Gets just brutally murdered, but while her parents are just kind of a couple of feet away from her and they can hear her dying and things like that. It gets really brutal, but I think it gets kind of over the piece as they've started to think that Scream's a bit more comedic than they actually are.
Mm. But they all have great openings, don't they? I really admire the fourth opening where you think it's the start of the movie and then you realise you're watching something else. And it does it about three times, doesn't it, before you're actually there. Yeah, they're really clever openings.
Good Stab films, 7 actually. Or something, I think it goes to. Yeah. And it's Kristen Bell.
That's right.
And
Anna Paquin.
Yeah.
We watched that one over Christmas while we were doing a jigsaw puzzle. There you go. Hey, rock and roll is that?
Yes. What was the jigsaw puzzle? Now we're intrigued.
It was a Christmas.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Fucking hell. what people must think. Watching Scream 4 doing a jigsaw puzzle. There you go. One thing about those movies, though, is don't they end up feeling a little bit samey? And it's like, I remember going to the cinema watching the first one, and because Henry Winkler was in the first one, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And I can remember thinking, he's the killer. And then he died, and oh shit, no, that one's a killer.
Mm-hmm.
And then every movie after that, instead of watching the movie, I'd be trying to work out who I thought the killer was, and it took me out of the movie a little bit. I'm just wondering if the same thing's going to happen with this one.
I mean, I've got my theory on it, and this probably will be absolutely untrue, because you'll see something even in a trailer that just immediately makes it nonsense, is that it will be Gale.
I was thinking it's going to be one of those three.
She's going to be the killer because her fame and her money's dried up and she's trying to find, get a new book to release. That's my thoughts, but then it's a bit of a flawed plan. One of them's going to die, at least, I think, anyway. My money's probably on David Arquette.
Yeah,
unfortunately.
I think that's mainly because he tried to be a wrestler. Have you seen that documentary?
I've not seen it, but I've heard of it. I've seen the poster, which I think was enough. I didn't need to see his bulge.
Yeah, fair play to him. Right then, Neil, you're number six.
Ash Williams, The Evil Dead trilogy. Although mainly number two and number three in the TV series, because he wasn't really a hero in the first movie. And we could, although the first movie is great and I've got a real, real soft spot for it, it hasn't aged well. And they basically remade it in the second one, didn't they? And made it the dark black comedy. And he became the hero that he justly deserved. I mean, who else delivers the line groovy as cool as Bruce Campbell?
Bruce Campbell's just a cool
dude. He is. He deserved more stardom to me than he got.
Yeah.
He really did. And if you've never read his book, read his book. It's absolutely bloody brilliant. But Ash. He's not scared of anything, is he?
No, I actually love the audiobook of his. Is it If Chins Could Talk?
And that's it.
It's a fantastic audiobook because he obviously reads it himself. Yeah.
It's a great book. But yeah, what a legend. And I highly recommend the TV series if you've not seen it. If you're a fan of gore, you can ask for no more with that. It is gory, like you wouldn't believe in the series. But
I've never seen it.
Highly recommend it. It's on Netflix.
Oh, right. Three seasons, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
And is it finished? Is it
free? I think so. I think so. But there is talk. I read somewhere on Fangora or something that they're going to go back to it and do it again. Mm. And it's the last thing Sam Raimi directed was one of the episodes of that. So
we get Evil Dead Rise this year as well.
That's supposed to be. Is that got Ash in it? Or
I don't know. I'm not actually. I'd imagine he'll at least have a cameo.
Like he did in the remake of the first one.
Something like that. That's all he really does.
Done being Ash. I thought he said he wasn't going to do it anymore.
Mm. All right.
I think he's executive producing it.
Right.
Bruce Campbell. So he's got a part in it. So I wouldn't be surprised if you just see him turning up. Even if it's like a legacy movie thing, you end up killing him off, which they seem to do in all these type of things.
Yeah.
Then that'd be a bit harsh, wouldn't it?
It would on Ash, because he's sort of overcome everything and then he just gets maimed in the new stuff. No.
Okay, my number six is Sarah Connor from Terminator.
Which one?
The original, the OG. Just basically, again, she's somebody that is being thrust into a situation that she has no control over, that she doesn't understand, that she's sat in a Cafe 80s or whatever it is, or Cafe Noir, isn't it? I think something like that.
And Indie Wars.
Tech, as they used to say back in the 80s. And then this big hunking man with a scope on his gun decides to try and shoot her, and all of a sudden... That's it. She's in
history is made.
Well, yeah, and the future is made. You could say. Yeah,
I just revisited Dark Fate. I'd never seen it, and it's on Disney, and I watched it. It was okay.
Which one's that? That's
the last one. Yeah, it's okay, but I don't know. It's got no heart or soul to it. It's really lifeless to watch it. If you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It's bizarre. Yeah. Bizarre what they've done there.
I did like Dark Fate. I think it's a bit, it's a bit by the numbers. They tried, and then they've tried to do something with the ending of it, which didn't really work for me. And then I don't even think they're continuing with it. They're trying to set up a new trilogy, and they've just cancelled that. So, yeah. I mean, I do have a bit of time for it. I think they tried to get back to the old kind of chase movie style, but didn't necessarily pull it off.
Question then, what are you guys' favourite Terminator movie?
Two.
It's got to be two, isn't it?
You see, I still prefer number one. I like Arnie as the bad guy. I love the threat and the terror rather than the action. I think the threat and terror in the first one works really well.
I think the number two has got that little bit more heart in it. The relationship between the T-800...
Yeah.
And John Connor, is just beautiful, and the bit at the end with the, you know, the thing, the
thumb,
the finger going up. Oh God, here we go again. Thumb going up in the lava. Oh God.
We get emails. the second one for me is, I mean, they are two different movies, aren't they? The first one's bordering on a horror movie. The second one's almost like a kind of family movie, as in with the kind of themes that are in it. I love both of them. I've got time for every Terminator movie, actually. I've seen everyone this, well, what, since I've been old enough.
Genesis.
So I went to see that opening day in our IMAX theatre up here, and I was the only person plus two other people on the opening day, and they sat next to me, which was a fucking nightmare. It's a couple. I don't know. I'd picked what I thought was the best seat in the house. It's like row H, bang in the middle. Thought, this is great. There's no one else here. They'd obviously went up and said, what's showing tonight? Oh, Terminator Genesis. Oh, fuck it, we'll do that. Or they look like good seats. Like going sick to that lonely guy. He looks like he needs a bit of company.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
They didn't sit either side of you, though, did they?
No, thankfully not, no.
Did they sit right next to
over either
did,
side, right next they, to me, the seat next to me.
Oh, Jesus, they didn't even give you one seat.
No, I mean, if I see someone in the cinema themselves, usually it's me, but if I see someone in the cinema themselves, I steer clear.
Yeah.
Especially, like, he's out in public on his own, he's watching a Terminator movie. Let's sit next to him, that's a sensible option.
Unbelievable. Right then, Andy, your number five.
My number five is Aragorn from Lord of the Rings, obviously. Yeah. Those movies had such a kind of big impact in my life when I was younger. Just seen, I think probably for everyone actually, so I don't know if the two of you are fans, but just the scope of them. We've never seen anything like it before. And I think Viggo Mortensen is just superb. He's the rider at the start, isn't he?
Yeah,
the first Lord of the Rings, and he's this kind of air of mystique about him. And the way, again, his character development over the three movies is great. He's just kind of not unlikely hero, but the unwilling hero at the start. Then he's the unwilling king, and he just ascends and leads everyone out of it in a positive way.
Yeah. One of the coolest entrances in Two Towers when he comes through the double doors. So cool, that
way. Yeah. Such a good gif.
Yeah. So which of those movies is your favourite?
Two Towers. Two Towers for me.
So, for me, I'd say The Hobbit. Part two.
Get the fuck out of here.
I'm only joking. I think for me, I love the first one.
Yeah,
I love The Fellowship of the Ring. I just think I'm the same with Lord of the Rings as I am with Game of Thrones. I tend to get a little bit confused when they're talking about characters or places.
Yeah.
You don't know whether one is the other. So you get a little bit confused and you just sort of have to go with it. And just ride it out and write, okay, that is a person and that is a place they're going to. But as a spectacle, I mean, I remember going to see that because I think did they come out the same years as The Matrix or was it like...
No, it was Harry Potter.
Was it Harry Potter? Because it was a thing where it was like every Christmas, wasn't it? A Lord of the Rings movie came out.
Yeah, 2001 was the first one.
Yeah.
And then they...
It was like you say, we hadn't seen that kind of scope before. And the battle in the final episode in number three was
Return of the King.
It was just breathtaking. But
the Helm's Deep one for me and the Two Towers wins out that. Again, we're talking about the Avengers earlier on, how they're going to put that together. I remember someone telling me there's a half hour battle scene in this. How can they work a half-hour battle scene into a movie? That's not going to work. And it's everything from the kind of the wet, horrible coldness, the original battle to Gandalf coming over the hill. I think it's Gandalf the White by then, isn't he? I've tried to read the books of Lord of the Rings and I couldn't get into them. The Hobbit was one of my favourite books and still is. I think it's a bit more kid-friendly. I tried to read Lord of the Rings to get a bit more of the backstory and I couldn't do it, but those movies are just I can't say enough great things about them, to be honest.
I agree. Go on then, Neil, your number five.
John Wick. the man himself. We spoke about him earlier with Robert McCall. But yeah, I love the John Wick movies. They're just one whole, aren't they? All three of them, they work well together. Although the three one does become almost exhausting, the amount of fighting that is in it when you're watching it. But yeah, John Wick, what Keanu has never been cooler, I don't think. I think he's cooler as that than he is as Neo. Yeah, I don't know what else to say, really, that I would love to be able to have, like Pav said, have that ability to kick ass in that fashion and not give a shit. Yeah, and everybody fear you.
It's the scene in the third one where they're fighting in is the antique store.
Yeah.
And he gets the knife out and the knife's not sharp enough to get through the guy's head. So he just starts battering it at his head.
That's it.
So brutal.
And the book, when he rams the book straight in the guy's throat, it's really, really, it's fighting. I mean, the third one is just all fighting.
Yeah.
Isn't it really? But it's still great. And I'm so intrigued to see where they're going for the fourth one and what they're going to do.
It's that thing, it's almost like they've got a little bit like Mission Impossible, where they've got to try and beat what they did before. You know, they can't do lesser than they did before, so they've got to keep upping the ante. So,
yeah, it's like a level up. But
yeah.
There is one thing where Keanu Reeves is much cooler, and it's SpongeBob SquarePants, Sponge on the Run,
where he
plays a floating head.
He does. He really does, yeah.
But yeah. I don't know what he's in.
I don't think there's another actor around that has such a range of amazing movies and terrible movies.
Mm.
I think, maybe Nick Cage, maybe Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, but even his terrible movies are fun to watch because Nick Cage is the over-actor of over-actors, isn't he?
Yeah.
But I think with Keanu Reeves, it's the films that he doesn't speak much are his hits.
Yes.
And the ones where he tries to act are the flops.
Yeah.
Ain't it where the bastard sleeps?
Yes.
Yeah, I think he knows his niche now, doesn't he?
Yeah,
I
think so. He's got to have.
Yeah. I think he'll just do John Wick and Matrix movies now until he retires.
Bill and Ted, maybe.
Or another Bill and Ted, maybe.
Because he doesn't age, does he? Let's be honest.
No. Okay, my number five is from Alien. It's Ellen Ripley.
It's my number three.
Ooh, okay. Okay, make a note of that. She is. I think it's like every single one of mine is like, she starts off, she's just somebody that works on a ship, and all the way through it, she seems to have the right answers. Whenever someone has a decision to make, her decision is the right one, even if it sometimes doesn't get taken. The stuff that Ian Holm does with the xenomorph or with the face hugger or whatever. But again, her whole arc, especially in the first one, where she starts off just as is she second in command? I think she is second in command.
Yeah, she is,
But then she ends up having to, that whole bit, that sort of final 20 minutes, half an hour of that movie, where she is literally just trying to blow the ship up and get to safety, is one of the most heart-pounding, tense moments, or sequences in a movie I think I've ever seen. Beautifully directed, obviously, by Ridley Scott, but it's just a fantastic performance because she genuinely just, it's that claustrophobic feeling that you get from that movie.
Mm.
You just think that she's safe and then she's not. And you get to see her in her underwear. Sorry, maybe I'm PC, but what can I say? We're back
to, like what you like.
We're back to loaded and
couldn't imagine anyone but Sigourney Weaver doing it either now, could you? She really put her own stamp on that, which was really good. Go on, I'm going to ask a good old question. Which is your favourite Alien movie?
First one for me.
Aliens.
Aliens? Yeah, I'm with Pav, the first one. I just think the tension in that is just, what a great movie. They're all good. I even like number three, Fincher's movie.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's got its problems, but I like the visuals on that, the directing style and everything. And the premise would have been really good if they'd have executed it well.
Yeah.
Studios, stay out, please.
Yeah. I think they're similar in the way they progressed as in the first two to the Terminator movies, where the first one is an outright kind of dark horror, grimy, claustrophobic. Mm. And then the second one gets the budget and becomes a balls-out action movie.
Yeah.
And you see Ripley again develop as well as a character when she fights the Queen. And Yeah, Aliens is one of my favourite action movies of all time, sci-fi slash action movies. If you
great, it's a great movie.
Yeah, yeah, I rewatched it recently.
The fourth one, then she's almost, she becomes a little bit almost like a superhero kind of thing. She's a
clone.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's got such dodgy CGI again. Dodgy CGI.
It's a strange director for that one. It was Jean-Pierre Jeunet. Amelie, wasn't it?
And Amelie, which is such a fantastic movie.
Yeah, it's an odd choice to direct an alien movie, certainly.
It was, but yeah, the first ever CGI aliens, weren't they?
That's right. You could tell.
Okay, so Andy, number four, you said Bruce Wayne. Yep. So, Neil, what's your number four?
Now, this is probably an old sort of generic, everybody would probably guess that what somebody would have him in his list is James Bond. But growing up, he was my... Well, there's some other people I will mention, but he's one of my heroes. I was always thinking, oh, wouldn't it be cool to have that job, to get the girl, to be able to have the license to kill, get sent to exotic countries and never get hurt. Yeah, that's my sort of action. But he's just the iconic, isn't it? I'm using that terrible word, but he is... If somebody says a movie hero, I would dare say that probably 80% of everybody would say, no, it has to be James Bond. He is... everything that a hero stands for, isn't it?
He was kind of close to my 10, to be honest, but I didn't have him on just because I lean more towards the Craig ones, I think.
They're good,
I've loved most of them to an extent, especially I really loved the last one there. He's just a great character overall.
And he is, isn't he? I mean, how many times has he saved the world compared to everybody else, you know? So
well, as much as you say that, you know, 80% of the people would have him in their top 10, Andy and I both haven't got him in
your top 10. But if you just generally, I didn't mean put their top 10 together, but said to somebody in the street, name me a movie hero, I would probably put 80% people would go James Bond.
Okay.
It'd be like a pointless answer would be about 80 out of 100.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think what you should do now is on Saturday you should go into the town centre and ask 100 people.
Okay.
And so just to back
I'll say
up,
it's for family fortunes.
Yeah, and just see if 80 people say James Bond.
Yeah, if I can be bothered, I will.
Okay, well, then it's not going to happen, is it? Right then. Okay, so my number four follows on a bit from Andy's number five, and I've got Mr. Frodo.
Oh.
So Frodo Baggins... the theme carries on, starts the whole saga off by just being a normal little hobbit, enjoying his drink and just loving the fact that he can see Gandalf, and finishes by getting one of his fingers chomped off. And I've never quite understood, at the very, very end, is he going off to die?
That's what is assumed.
Yeah, it's the Undying Lands.
Yeah.
Right. Which, you'll have to explain that to me, Andy.
I know rough bits about it, you might get tweets about this. I'm probably wrong, so I apologise. I think the Undying Lands is a place where they go to rest, and I don't know what rest is. I think it's basically they become so exhausted. Like, I mean, I think Gandalf goes there as well, that they just feel they can't carry on in the kind of normal world anymore.
So it's almost like a heaven, or like a Valhalla.
Yeah. Valhalla, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think it's around that. Yeah,
right. Okay, that sort of, I mean, that makes sense because he did go through a hell of a lot, but I don't understand why then Samwise Gamgee doesn't go with him,
because he's got his wife.
I know, but he sort of went through the same stuff. I suppose he didn't go through the whole stuff with the ring and that, did he?
He never put the ring on, really, did he? And suffer all those bits.
Never put a ring on it, did he, Neil?
Never getting Beyonce, but... I mean, I think they went off to recover from how many fucking endings there were. That's what they went off to recover from.
I know.
Peter Jackson sitting saying, right, we need one more ending, but they just... Elijah Wood going, no, fuck off, I'm getting on that boat.
Yeah,
I'm exactly. I'm knackered.
Yeah. Oh my goodness me. You know, and even then, after that, there's still an extended version.
Oh yeah.
Released. So it's sort of like, you know, Peter Jackson loves those extended versions, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Right, so that was our number four. Andy, you said Ellen Ripley for number three. So, Neil, yep. What's your number three?
So, again, I went back to my childhood and posters on my wall of the heroes that I liked. And it's Han Solo. I did have him as my hero, Pav, even though he dies. But I'm going from my childhood here. And he was always the cockeye, you know.
Cockeye?
Yeah, he's the cockeye pirate.
I've never seen Han Solo
cockeye. I didn't mean to say cockeye. He was the cocky, sure-fired hero, wasn't he? He was the one that had the quirk, the quips and everything. Yeah, he's to me, he's the hero of the original trilogy. He's the one that all us kids wanted to be. We didn't want to dress up at a party like I had to at our fashion thing, our fancy dress thing, Pav, where I was Luke Skywalker and you were Han Solo.
I was, yeah.
You were. So, yeah, we all wanted to be that.
I wasn't cockeyed, though.
Well, I don't know. I saw how tight your trousers were.
Well, no. Sure, me, since The Force Awakens, I watched the original trilogy just with a slightly different...
Right.
Just with different eyes, if you like, because I know what's going to come for that character.
But how does that make him any less of a hero?
I'm not saying it doesn't make him less than a hero. I just feel more empathy towards him because he's all cocky and I'm thinking, oh, mate, spoilers, your son's going to shove a fucking lightsaber straight through you and you're going to fall where health and safety never put rails up on that fucking big like walkway for some reason. I don't understand why. But you're just going to go, and no one's even going to be able to, like, give you a proper funeral because you're going to be at the bottom of this bloody reactor thing.
They can come back in episode 12 whenever they make that, because Palpatine fell down into a big reactor and he was fine.
That is true.
Episode 12, the ghost of Han Solo.
Yeah, and he would have made an even bigger army without anybody knowing. Planets and planets of spaceships.
Can you imagine
somehow when he returned?
They do the reveal of Han Solo and he stood there with cock eyes.
Cock eyes. That's a violent.
And you think, oh my God, what have they done to Han Solo?
We can cast Marty Feldman. Oh shit, he's dead.
Okay, right then. So my number three, I said Rocky Balboa. So Andy, your number two.
My number two is Donnie Darko.
Ooh.
Okay.
Again, I think it's because of the importance of the movie to me at the time. I was prime age for when that movie came out. Teenager. The way that Donnie is basically like an innocent teenager that has to make the choice to let himself die to save the world, essentially. That's what he has to do. And you can go into time loops and time travel and plot holes, I suppose, with that movie quite easily. Just a great movie, a great soundtrack, a fantastic kind of antagonist in Frank. Who I have tattooed on my arm, but you can't really see that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's awesome.
And just has... There's an innocence to Donnie at the same time as being that kind of grumpy teenager. He's got a kind of wonder with the world because of, I think, with the mental health problems he has in it, and he's kind of... a different understanding of the world to it, and having to make that sacrifice at the end, I just thought was beautiful in the terms of the movie. Plus, he outs a paedophile and burns his house down.
Yeah,
it's a hero.
Bonus added. Bonus. Oh, yeah.
The director of that, what's his name? Richard.
Richard Kelly.
Kelly, he didn't really do it, did he? That next one he did with Kevin Smith and The Rock and all in. What the fuck was that all about? I've watched that twice now and I still have no understanding.
It seems to be getting a bit of a kind of renaissance and a re-evaluation. And he's talking about making a second Southland Tales.
Southland Tales, yeah. I still don't get what it was about.
No, he's not done anything in years. He'd done The Box.
Was that the last thing you did?
I think that was the last thing you did in terms of directing, and that was bad.
That was bad. But then that was a studio film, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Just a gun for hire type of thing.
Excuse me.
But yeah.
Yeah, he didn't live up to that. What a debut, though, isn't it? What a debut.
It's such a clever movie and such a layered movie that you watch it so many times and you still...
Find
little bits just click into place.
Yeah.
That's a great choice. I never even thought of Donnie Darko, I must admit. Great choice.
It's, watching, go back, and I used to, when I was younger, when I had the time for it, I would go back and watch movies, and then I'd watch them with the director's commentary. And when he's telling you little bits, like, it's not really a spoiler or anything, but there's a bit where Maggie Gyllenhaal goes into the house and the horn beeps outside before the plane crashes into the house. Mm. She's been on a date with Frank, the bunny, the guy who's in there, and he's subconsciously beeping the horn to let Donnie know to get out of his room.
Oh, right.
But, and it's all that stuff to go on about. But then he kind of George Lucas the fuck out of it when he comes in with director's cuts and changes the intro. He changes the soundtrack as well, which was unforgivable. The opening track is Echo and the Bunnymen, and then I think in the director's cut it's an excess. Still a good song, but it's not Echo and the Bunnymen that's perfect.
Right, right. Yeah, very good one.
Yeah, great.
Neil, then, you're number two.
So I was specifically thinking of the first movie. It's John McClane.
That's my number two.
Is it really?
It's my number two.
I mean, as progressively got on in the movies, he became more and more of an untouchable superhero rather than a hero. But
yeah,
that first movie, there's no other movie, I think, that has done it as well of an everyday man having to become a hero and doing his own thing. I don't think any other movies has achieved it as much. And thank God it was Bruce Willis and not Sylvester Stallone, his first thought. Imagine that.
Or Burt Reynolds.
Burt Reynolds.
So that was supposed to have been Stallone in Die Hard originally. Like, one of the
people put up, yeah.
Yeah.
There's a few that Stallone turned down, thankfully. Beverly Hills Cop's another one. I don't know how that would have worked with him being blacked up.
He would have went for it. Yeah. Maybe that's maybe more Mel Gibson's kind of way to go, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mel Gibson
He is the literal man in the wrong place at the wrong time. Obviously, not just once, but quite a few times in his life. But
yeah,
the one thing about John McClane is starts off like pristine and nice and clean, and by the end of it, he is just this bloody broken mess.
Yeah,
And that's what I love about those kind of heroes, is somebody that is put in that situation where he's never really completely in control. He doesn't know what's going to happen. He's to the point where he's telling, I can't remember the cop's name, but telling him to say to my wife, you know, that I love her and stuff. So he's thinking he's not going to come out of it alive. It's one of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah.
Without a shadow of a doubt. And
it's very strong. Very strong.
That's why I had it at number two as well. Right, before we reveal our number ones, Andy, if you want to just give your rundown of 10 to 2, and then Neil will do the same and I'll do the same before we give our number ones.
Okay, so 10, I have Trinity. Number 9, I have Ophelia from Pan's Labyrinth. Number 8, Tony Stark. Number 7, The Bride, Beatrix Kiddo. Number 6, Sidney Prescott. Number 5, Aragorn. Number 4, Batman, Bruce Wayne. Number 3, Ellen Ripley. And number 2, Donnie Darko.
Wonderful. Neil?
So my number 10 is Jack Burton from Big Trouble in Little China. Then we got number 9, Robert McCall from The Equalizer. Number 8, Bruce Wayne / Batman. Number 7, Rocky Balboa. Number 6, Ash Williams from The Evil Dead Trilogy. Number 5, John Wick. Number 4, James Bond. Number 3, Han Solo. And number 2, John McClane.
Lovely. And mine is number 10, Obi-Wan Kenobi. Number 9, George Bailey from It's a Wonderful Life. 8, Sean from Shaun of the Dead. 7, Neville Longbottom from Harry Potter. 6, Sarah Connor from the Terminator movies. 5, Ellen Ripley from Alien. 4, Mr. Frodo Baggins from Lord of the Rings. 3, Rocky Balboa. And number 2, John McClane. So, Andy, would you like to give us your number one movie hero, please?
My number one is my namesake, Sarah Connor.
Ooh.
Terminator 2 is my favourite movie of all time for reasons apart from the fact that it's a great movie, and there's sentimental reasons behind it as well. It's the perfect action movie, and I think it's probably the perfect sequel. Sarah Connor as a character from the first one, as we were talking about earlier on, she's this kind of meek waitress who is thrust into this situation, not of her own doing. She's told she has to give birth to the saviour of mankind, and there's a crazy guy in a trench coat chasing after her with a sawn-off shotgun, and a really hefty Austrian guy being there as well. And then just her character change into Terminator 2, where she is the ultimate badass. She's doing pull-ups on her bed. She's stabbing doctors in the knee. She's beating the shit out of sex offenders with a truncheon. Like, and then just, she obviously has her flaws where she tries to shoot a family, but putting that to the side, I just think she's especially in that second movie, the ultimate action hero. She's just fantastic. And that baggage that she's got as well, of knowing for years that this is what she's got to, at the end of the first Terminator, there's a storm coming, I know. And she still carried through with it.
Mm.
Is quite a, because I'd imagine, see, there is no fate but what we make for ourselves in Terminator 2. She could have decided not to do that. You never know, like, but she went with it, and she owned it, I suppose, is the best way. And she is the hero of the Terminator movies. You have your Arnie, who's the muscle, but she's the brains. She's the real protagonist, I think, throughout all of them.
Yeah, great choice.
That moment where, like you say, she's so strong and such a powerful hero through that movie, but as soon as she sees Arnie, she just breaks and crumbles. Yeah. And it's almost like that whole facade of her being this strong hero that she feels she has to be completely wiped away when she sees this face from her past.
Yeah.
That she knows is that's a good one.
Well, I mean, Linda Hamilton is fantastic.
Yeah.
Her performance over both movies, and the fact that the way she changed herself for both movies is just incredible. And we were talking about Dark Fate earlier on. I do like Dark Fate. And she'd taken a huge step away from acting. But it was that movie that made her come back. I remember hearing the story she told that her neighbours didn't know she was an actress until they seen the poster for Dark Fate on a billboard. Because she'd not done anything for years. I mean, the last thing I remember seeing her in was Dante's Peak.
Oh, Christ,
She might have done something since then, but it's just a fantastic performance, a fantastic character. I think James Cameron is good at getting strong female characters in his movies. Like, he developed Ripley as well to a different way, a different extent. Just outstanding.
Good one. Go on then, Neil. What's your number one? I'm wondering whether it might be the same as mine.
Particularly, I'm going to go with one movie that he stars in, which is probably one of my favourite movies of all time, Raiders of the Lost Ark. It's got to be Indiana Jones.
That's my number one as well.
Yeah.
I mean, he is your classic boy's own hero, isn't he? He dates right back to the old chapter serials that Pavel would remember that we used to watch on a Saturday morning. You'd have Flash Gordon or...
Not that fucking old, you bastard.
They were on when you were on it.
Well, they were, but they were reruns. It wasn't like
of course they were.
Rain with Flash Gordon Buster Crabbe and all that.
There was Dick Barton, the secret spy they showed and things like that. And, you know, it harks back. And I don't know whether, Andrew, you'd remember, but there used to be these, like, commando little comic and action books.
My dad had loads of them.
Which was always a boy's own adventure. And Indy would have been straight out of one of those books. Mm-hmm. You know, I love the line in it that sums everything up when they turn to him. What are you going to do? I don't know. I'm making this up as I go along. I think it's perfect. You know, it means that he's human to the rest of us. He gets hurt. He gets battered. Harrison Ford, thankfully, is the man that made him that. I mean, could you imagine if it had been Tom Selleck?
Yeah, but you say that, but you would have not thought of anyone else but Tom Selleck.
Well, you're saying that, but, I think Harrison Ford brought his own to it.
He's perfect. He is.
Yeah, he is indie, isn't he? Yeah. He's more indie than he is Han Solo, to me. Yeah.
But in the fact that they ended it after the third one as well, and they never even thought about making a fourth one, that was brilliant.
Is there a fourth one?
I think no.
No.
There's not going to be a fifth one either. Yeah, they were filming that up here, actually.
Yeah, but it's been delayed, hasn't it, again?
Yeah.
something's gone on, but they reckon he'll be 80 when he's filming it. Now.
Yeah, he's 79 now, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, fingers crossed. Well, yeah, Glasgow, the place that films everything now. Batman was filmed there, wasn't it?
We had the Batman, the Robert Pattinson one. We've got Batgirl filming just now. I drove past the set today.
Right.
Which has got Michael Keaton in it, and there's like a mural to... There's like a mural of that Batman. We had... They turned... So I work in delivery. Right. And I have to deliver into the city centre, and they'd shut off all the streets you need to drive in. It's all one way to change Glasgow city centre into 1960s New York, maybe for Indiana Jones, or maybe 70s. I'm not too sure. I think it's Kennedy.
Yeah, 60s, yeah.
We had Glasgow, we had Neil, if you know George Square.
Yep.
In Glasgow, that was changed into Philadelphia for World War Z.
It's a guy that is where I stay was actually sat in the cafe watching that being filmed.
Right, okay. Cool.
They told him, you can't come out the cafe for a bit, but everything you have is free while we just film this bit. And he sat and watched it, bird's eye view. Mm-hmm.
The Flash as well. I was I actually was heading into the city centre to watch football with my dad, and they were filming The Flash, but it was a guy in Ben Affleck's Batman suit.
Right,
riding a motorbike and getting chased.
Saw the pictures to that. Yeah.
Getting chased by the big army truck or something. Yeah, it must be cheaper to turn Glasgow into America than film in America.
It's the tax breaks, isn't it, that Scotland's doing? I read about it. They're giving huge tax breaks.
Bring in brilliant extra stuff. Money.
But yeah, indie. Going back to indie. Yeah, sorry, a movie hero. That just to me is the ultimate. You, Pav.
I do, and the thing is, the one line I relate to now, watching the movies now, is it's not the years, it's the mileage. Yeah. That's what I tend to relate to now, being 50-odd, whatever it is I am. Mm. But he is, to me, you know, if adventure has a name, it's Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
And that, for me, is the ultimate hero.
And Raiders of the Lost Ark, I heard Steven Spielberg speak personally and say it's the only film he can watch and relax while he watches it and not think of it from a director's point of view his movies. Yeah, it's his only film, Raiders.
Nice. Well, it's a perfect movie. It's one of the perfect movies, isn't it?
It is.
So there we go. There's our top tens. Now, we've got some honourable mentions that were sent to us. So Jennifer N. Sunshine. What a lovely name.
That is nice.
She had Trinity as her top one.
Nice.
At this one, Samantha said, movie heroes for me has got to be Rocky Balboa and Maximus Decimus Meridius.
Oh, Gladiator.
Dan said, I'm a Potterhead and my movie hero is Voldemort. He would have been victorious too if it hadn't have been for that lightning scar four-headed shit.
I like the cut of his jib.
It's like... You had your man from Lord of the Rings who wanted to conquer a whole world. Voldemort only had to take over a school and he fucking failed. Like, he's so shit.
There you go, Dan. That's Andy that said that, not us. Andrea Adams said Kevin Costner in Dragonfly and in The Bodyguard. Mary Jane Sims said Mel Gibson in Braveheart.
Okay.
And Paul Newman, The Verdict. Now, I wouldn't... See, because what Hollywood did to the Braveheart, or to the Braveheart, the William Wallace story, I thought it's a bit, you couldn't really put him as a hero because it's sort of, a lot of it is made up. I mean, look, here I am, an Englishman, telling a Scottishman all about Braveheart.
Well, I mean, I wasn't going to mention it, but then you started talking about how cheap Scottish people are. So
that wasn't me. Yeah, Andy. I mean, that was over there.
The Braveheart movie is one that I watched a lot when I was younger, when I had a bit more of an anti-English sentiment about myself, mostly based around football.
Right.
So if there was going to be something on, you would stick Braveheart on just to get the blood boiling. now I'm more mature, and I realise that Mel Gibson's a horrible bastard, and watching anything that he's in can be quite difficult. It's historically inaccurate. I mean, the woman who he falls in love with, or he knocks her up anyway, but you can find out at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
I think she was 3 years old when he died. in real life. And there's the thing about Wallace is you don't actually know a huge amount. It's mostly done off of, I think the movie's based around, it's a poem or a song by Blind, oh, I forgot his name. Anyway, it's based off of this kind of tale, anyway, about William Wallace.
It's all folklore that's been passed down. Yeah. But then Hollywood get their hands on it and decide that they want to change this because it's better for the story. And but Marie, if that's what you want, that's what you want. I'm not going to say it's wrong.
And then film it in Ireland because Ireland looks more Scottish.
There you go. That's Hollywood for you. Stu Grant said the dude from Big Lebowski, Superman, Christopher Reeve, Samuel Loomis. Now, Sam, look up.
Loomis, isn't that the guy from Halloween? No.
That's Dr. Loomis, eh?
Yeah.
Maybe that's what it is.
Maybe it's his first name. I don't actually know his first name. That's quite bad.
Yeah. But is he? I mean, he spends a lot of the movie running around but not getting anything. And he came back in Halloween 4, didn't he? Okay, it might not be much.
Should have Googled it. Cornelius and Zira. So I'm assuming that's from that's Planet of the Apes, isn't it? Cornelius and Zira. Ashley Williams, Peter Venkman, David Dunn, Gandalf, Marty McFly, and Kermit the Frog. And on Instagram, below_average_man said John McClane, Indiana Jones, Ashton Evil Dead, Luke Skywalker, Ellen Ripley, and Clarice Starling.
Ooh, Clarice.
Mm, there you go. That's a good one. So there you go.
Yeah, interesting.
Neil, do you want to just give everybody info on how they can get hold of us and all of that gubbins,
please? Of course I can. So you can find us on all the social medias under at Top 10 Pods. Give us a click, give us a like, come and follow us wherever you may be. Email us at top10pods@hotmail.com with either your answers to any of our top 10s or a new one. Give us some ideas. Come and help support the podcast at patreon.com/top10pods, where you can get rewards such as our episode super early, bonus episodes, behind the scenes videos, and even a chance to be a guest yourself. And check out all the links via Linktree. You can find them in the link in the show notes below. And please come and subscribe. Leave us a rating, review on Apple Podcasts, or subscribe and follow us on any other platform that gives you your podcasts.
Wow, you fired through that, didn't you? Jeez.
Didn't we? I'm like one of those things at the end of an advert.
Talking to Patreon, we've got a new reward out now where there's video playlists for every episode, starting from episode 21. So just so sort of legally, it's not every single episode that we've done. From episode 21, you'll now find a playlist, a video playlist relevant to what we talk about on the episode. Also, for you watching on YouTube, I've got a t-shirt on. One of our top 10 of anything podcast t-shirts. The link is in the show notes, podcastmerch.co.uk/top10pods, I think is the right one, but the link is in the show notes. Andy and your podcast will put the link in the show notes for the podcast as well, so please listen out for Andy's podcast. What have you got coming up on your pod?
So the next episode we'll be recording is A Marvelous 2021, which is going to look back at everything Marvel released, including the TV shows, the latest Spider-Man, the animated What If series they had out. And then after that, we're going to get back to the kind of normal programming, starting with A Scanner Darkly.
Nice. So just click the link and go and subscribe and listen. Andy, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
A lot of fun. And again, not as many duplicates I thought there was going to be. There were some really interesting ones there. So thank you very much.
And to apologise, when I'm next up in Glasgow, Andrew, I'll buy you a pint.
Yeah. I don't have any money. I'm skint. I'm cheap and Scottish, so I need you to buy me one.
Oh, that's all right. You just got homebrew, have you?
Oh, yeah, loads. Yeah.
No, of course I will. That's my treat.
They'll be waiting for you at the border, Neil. They'll be waiting
for you at the border, don't you? And they always wave when I leave as well.
Yeah, they do.
Very polite.
Andy, thank you once again for joining us.
Cheers, guys.
Brilliant.
Thank you very much, Neil.
Thank you very much, guys.
All right. Thank you very much, everybody. And let's go start the countdown.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.